1-800-878-0408. And you never know. Send us your testimony and you might be in a commercial. LifeChange Tea at GetTheTea.com.
Quality of water your
drink. Water.com.
Concerned price and tea. Bottled water.
PerkyWater.com.
Concerned about natural contaminants in your water?
Water.
PerkyWater.com. Call 888-344.
That's 888-803-4438.
This is The Micro Effect.
The Micro Effect.
www.themicroeffect.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to The Story Behind the Story. I'm Clint Richardson, and again, I'll be with you until next Tuesday, and Dr. H. Sherratt will be back on Wednesday. Glad you could join us today, and again, we're here with Mr. Walter Burian, and soon to be joined by former State Senator Dick Rosa. Now, Walter, I had to bring this up, because this is the most important wool that's been pulled over people's eyes. Now, the most often the response that's most often used by people when they hear this truth about the CAFR and government investment in these corporations and the fact that they can use those investments to their advantage is that it isn't true. It can't be true. It's not possible. It goes against everything we've ever learned, because corporations own the government. You know, despite the documents, despite the proof otherwise, corporations own governments, yet there's no evidence of this whatsoever. No stock ownership in government. I mean, it's the biggest fallacy.
Let's go back into the 40s when GOFA was started and so forth. You had a group of some of the largest players, the Rockefellers, the whole group of the gang. You know, they always knew government was where the money was, so they started with these private associations to direct government into going into the annual financial reporting basis of a normal company, and this way they could get these investment funds growing, and thus by consult direct the investments to have their own projects, their own companies, grow and prosper worldwide. Well, that worked out great for them in the end of the 40s, 50s, 60s. But government going into the 70s was growing so massive on the investment funds and exercising their own, little takeover, that the big family boys just became insignificant. You know, it's the bloated, spoiled child, 500-pound child, and, the parents were kind of getting pushed off to the side at that point in time. So from the 70s, government consolidating their tactics took over more and more. The interest rate jumped, and we're one up to 21%, back in the 80s, 22%. People were complaining about the banks. Who was the primary investor reaping most of the rewards on that? Collective government investment funds. The housing market bubble, who made the money on the upside? Who made the money on the downside? The collective government on their position in investment funds. The tip-off I got for the collapse on 2008, I saw an AP release from CalPERS International, which was designed to allocate funds globally for all local governments, not just California. And they had an AP announcement saying they were going to hire 450 new derivative desk traders for their international operation. Well, being a commodity trading advisor instantly, I knew the meaning of that. 450 new, extra traders, it's bigger than Merrill Lynch had as a company. And here's just the add-on. And anyone who trades the futures market knows the big money is to be made on the downside. Prices may take months going up, then sometimes in 3 days, it will collapse and You know, the equity will be lost, and people holding short positions, though, make an absolute killing when that happens. So the add-on of 450, I said they're preparing themselves for the major collapse. I put out an email post to my email list saying, beyond, I think it was September. It was either August 15th or September 15th. I forget which one now. But beyond high grounds, the worst economic instability is gonna, in the last 60 years is going to be seen, have cash in hand, basically. And on that day was when the collapse started. I think it was with Bear Stearns announcing that they were insolvent. And, you know, we had crude oil prices go down from $144 a barrel, bottoming out at 28. Precious metals collapsed. U.S. Treasuries, interest rates went down to almost zero, which is usually contrary to that kind of circumstance. Usually interest rates go up, but they were pre-positioned. What the 450 new desk traders were put on there for were to establish these massive short positions in their own funds and the designated funds that they had allocations to, you know. So before the collapse, you know, they went heavily short the crude oil, heavily short the precious metals. They went long the dollar because to perpetuate the collapse, you know, government has probably about $45 trillion invested internationally. They started liquidating some of their physical holdings, about $3.5-4 trillion, which perpetuated the collapse in the stock market, thus guaranteeing themselves, you know, liquidity on the profits they had on their short derivative positions. You know, the public has played like total idiots, you know, so, oh, the derivative thing, oh, everyone got screwed with the derivative thing, oh, lost all this money. Yeah, right. On a derivative trade, for every dollar lost in one account, a dollar is credited to another account. So if there were, you know, 25, 30 trillion lost on the world derivative market, the 25, 30 trillion transferred into somebody else's account. Who? Collective government, primarily. In on the, you know, the manipulation. And what do? They destabilize the entire marketplace and then, use a trillion here, a trillion there of taxpayer revenue to shore up their own marketplace, which they just stole 25, 30 trillion from globally. I mean, so it's greed and opportunity unrestrained. And the public, not looking at the basics. I mean, like, I'm talking, you're talking, I've listened to hundreds of radio shows. People just like to keep on going on. And I emphasize the point, and I'm sitting there with a baseball bat in my hand ready to clock the public over the head, saying, look at the basics. There's nothing complicated here. And, in fact, the opposition tries to complicate the hell out of it so you won't look at the basics. You know, and when you look at the basics.
The traders who go to work for a company like CalPERS are the basically the top of the industry. I mean, you don't get a job at CalPERS.
I worked at Merrill Lynch for about a year out in Morristown, and anyone who did good, you know, trading, I mean, it was real sharp, they took them off the public accounts, put them on the institutional government accounts. So they always pooled the best thinkers with the institutional government accounts because that's where the money was. You know, a lot of the smucks they left dealing with the public. But,
now, how much of that derivatives profit actually go to CalPERS California as opposed to somewhere else in the world through CalPERS International?
Again, they're going to try to play a shell game there. On the more visible domestic accounts, they'll show a loss or try to show a loss. Okay, on the international global accounts, you know, where the public's not looking, doesn't have easy access, they will, you know, move the majority of the profitable trades into those global funds. You know, where the public's not even going to have a clue to look in the first place. You know, so it's all information management, equity management, and allocations. You know, if you took a $100,000 loss in your own name, but you had a company where you made a $5 million profit, you just kept telling people, oh, I took a $100,000 loss in that market collapse. Oh, I don't know if I'll survive. When you forget to mention your $5 million profit through your shell corporation, you know, slight tad bit of misrepresentation there. But, you know, They're not going to be open. They're not going to be honest. I mean, when you talk about this type of money, as I mentioned, it's not the Joe Sixpack crowd betting $5 on Dallas. You have ultimate control, the biggest monopoly on the face of the planet, with the public sitting there being masterfully entertained off in La La Land.
Well, so who's in control?
You're talking tens of thousands of different you know, interested parties that are networking within the structure, building up their little empires, small and large. You know, when I first started National Disclosure, I get hundreds of calls. Well, Walter, where's the money at? What account's it in? Who's controlling it all? I said, there's hundreds, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of different accounts. You know, this is the principle of operation. And, you know, there's quite a few people involved, you know, some on the higher levels, some on the lower levels. But it all boils down to money, cash flow, and investment wealth and backing their projects and their buddies' projects, their corporations, as the public is drained. Now, here's an important point before, yeah, this is the most important point I can get out on this show. You know, when I looked at total gross income, you know, a budget report for a local government, they focus on where tax income is brought in, tax income is expended. So the public looks at a budget report. Oh, government's surviving on tax income. Wrong. Look at the annual finance reports, start adding up the investment income, the enterprise income, and the tax income. You know, usually on a large entity, it's about one-third tax income, two-thirds investment and enterprise income. So what I brought forward is what the city of Mesa partially did, and they're an excellent example. You know, over 40 years ago when they established the city charter, they said, let's do something to benefit the population. Most local governments just sit there trying to bilk the population of taxation. What Mesa did was they allocated, and made it mandatory that any investment fund, whether it be within the local government general purpose operating funds or enterprise operations, had to contribute X amount of the return into the general purpose operating funds. Any enterprise operation had to contribute X amount of dollars into the general purpose operating funds. So the city owns the power company. Number one, they have the lowest electric rates in the state. But the power company pitches in, depending upon what year you look at, $50 million to $160 million a year into the general purpose operating funds. The Mesa Police Department, when I looked in 99, they had their own investment trust fund. It was about $141 million. And it generated for that year, I think, $26.4 million for the year, and their operating budget was $30 million. So about 85% of their operating budget was paid for by the return on their own investment fund. Now, the city of Mesa has the best police department, biggest, best equipment, best cars. Why? Because it's paid for by the return on their investment fund. Just like a pension fund, you know, is designed to pay salaries and benefits at retirement. You know, they established funds to pay their ongoing general purpose operating budgets. Now, I looked in 99, which is 98's figures, 65% of the general purpose operating funds were paid for by the return on their own investment funds and enterprise operations pitch-ins. So what I put forward is what I call the TRF fund, Tax Retirement Fund, designed to make the public the first line beneficiary of the investment wealth. It's designed just like a pension fund, but instead of paying a salary and benefit at retirement, the TRF fund pays the ongoing general purpose operating expenses for that local city, county, school district, or state into perpetuity with the specific design to eliminate and phase out all taxation, being that taxation, all it is a it's a revenue source. Investment income, revenue source. Enterprise income, revenue source. So you're going to use the two, investment income and enterprise operation revenue source, to eliminate the other revenue source, taxation. And in this fashion, the public gets taxation eliminated off their backs. They become, they start collecting 100% of their productivity value. We're not going to talk federal now, but we'll get there a few years afterwards. They'll follow by example. But you now create these massive investment funds, you know, which the public's the first line beneficiary through the phasing out and elimination of all taxation. And you now have unlimited capital reinvestment for the financial cartels and industrial complex, so they're very happy. Government administrations getting phenomenal cash flows, truckloads of cash rolling in from the investment returns on the TRF fund. So, in effect, it creates a win-win situation for all involved and creates a prosperous economy for the next 1,000 years.
One of the things I liked the most about your idea is the, you know, right now when you contribute to CalPERS or any other pension system, you have no control over how that money is invested. Now, part of your TRF idea is to reinvest that money. For instance, California invests about 15% of its actual investments in California. Everything else is either national or international, a lot of it federal. Mm-hmm. So your idea is to say, well, at least a certain percent must go back into the local, not even
local,
the real estate.
Invested in local economies, so you have zero unemployment rate and thriving businesses. The you can also target certain industry groups, solar, wind, energy, methanol, to help support those industry groups, which is a benefit to the population. The oil companies, I mean, the rape going on there on gasoline prices, it has to do with the profit being generated for the oil companies and the ownership of the oil companies by collective government. They're guaranteeing themselves their own profit, so that's why you have the high gas and oil prices, and they just kind of micromanage it. Well, population is slowing down too far. We're taking too much money out of the pocket. Let's stabilize prices or lower prices a little bit. And once the population recovers, okay, let's jack up the gas prices again, take some more undisclosed taxation through investment. So, you know, if you look at the Chavez, you know, gas down there is 46 cents, 52 cents a gallon. And the reason being is that, you know, the Venezuela, you know, has, you know, lots of oil that they drill for and so forth. But he has a mandate that no oil is exported until there's a surplus. And, you know, to keep the price down at about 65, you know, to 45 cents a gallon. But then if their surplus occurs, then they export the oil. Now, people are sound by condition. Oh, it's OPEC and the Arabs are raising oil. We import very little oil, and it's basically to make up shortfalls on long-term contracts that we may have. If you look at our oil production in the United States, we export substantially more than we import. And if you look at the contract ownership of even international oil wells, which are owned by domestic companies or the U.S., you know, they export outside of the U.S. because when they can get, you know, $4 a liter, you know, in London or France or wherever, you know, why sell it even at $3 a gallon when they can get 12 anywhere else around the world?
Well, let's
you know,
be,
Venezuela,
let's be
Chavez is not after the profit. He was after to benefit his population to make sure that they had low prices on gasoline.
Absolutely.
So that's where their problem. That's where
and
his
that's
policy
what you're talking
stands.
About. That's what you're talking about essentially doing is ensuring that return, that the actual investments. And again, let's be clear here. What you're talking about is correcting a system that already exists. One of the major things that people will say is, wait a minute, you're talking about giving complete control to corporations to own the to invest in corporations and influence the way those corporations operate. And yet, that already exists. That already exists. And all you're
doing is you're reverting the first-line beneficiary from government and the inside players, making the first-line beneficiary the population through the elimination of all taxation. So, you know, that's good for everybody because the public with more money to spend and building up their wealth base, they create a thriving economy. Thus, the corporations are thriving. Government's thriving with more money coming in from the investment returns. It's a win-win situation for all involved. And when I'm writing into the prospectuses of the TRS, you know, you phase out taxation, but knowing the greed and opportunity of government, let's start charging more for traffic tickets and our local city pool. Let's double the rate for a family membership. You know, I'm covering that area also, being that there'll be a freeze on any fines, fees, or, whatever within that local venue. And, in fact, the TRF will be designed from the equity generated. Say, for example, the local government, the local city pool, which they charge $65 a year for a family membership, may go down to zero for $35.
Let's take an example of something that might change with, again, government is already the main investor in these corporations. So let's take the medical/pharmaceutical industry, and let's say that suddenly these TRF funds were all of a sudden taking care of taxation, and then they're, you know, invested in these companies. How would they'd be changed through this?
You can design into the prospectus for the TRF that healthcare costs and, you know, pharmaceutical costs and so forth can be paid for, you know, directly allocated from the returns from the pharmaceuticals and healthcare industry, thus subsidizing the entire population and price freezing the expense and actually lowering the expense.
Well, let's face it, though. Here's my question. The medical and pharmaceutical industry relies to be profitable, relies on sick people, and the pharmaceutical industry relies on treating symptoms and not disease to be profitable. So how
right. And that's also in your prospectuses, you can draft in bonuses and, you know, incentives. Say, for example, a city that is, you know, reaming everybody on traffic tickets and fines, they may be penalized. It could cost them more than they're collecting. You know, and if they have lower fines and fees and crime in the area, they may get bonuses. On the pharmaceutical companies and so forth, if they have, you know, more efficiency and better results from what they're doing, they may get more investments from the TRF funds as an incentive because they're doing a good job, not just pumping people through and killing them by over-medicating or unnecessary procedures.
Okay, but the question still remains, how are you going to change the profit model so that it doesn't matter whether you're investing in something, if you're investing in a cure, in other words, instead of just symptom relief? That's the question.
You create the incentive basis of where the monies are invested and where the returns are allocated based on performance and good results, not bad results. Right now, you know, they make more money from bad results than good results, just by design and ease of opportunity.
Right, but isn't that the question? How do you make money off good results? Wouldn't that actually lower the value of the company?
No, because on good results, people pay for good results. And when you have the local governments having bonus incentives for all the companies they're investing in and dealing with based on incentive results, the company may get paid more. And the company may now have higher profits and doing less procedures, less work, less prescriptions of medications. You know, it's all, you know, information management and structured management with a good incentive and a good drafted outcome projected based on the incentives and where you're allocating the money and who you're investing with. You know, you have to keep a guideline on making the public the first-line beneficiary, not just of the investment wealth coming in to eliminate taxation, but utilization of the investment wealth where they have lower crime, lower illnesses, you know, sanctions are taken against companies that are intentionally poisoning the population. Yeah, it's all about money. It always has been about money, wealth transfer, and the whole nine yards. And when you go in with the design to protect everyone's interests and benefit all, you know, with the same common ideology, you do have good results. You know, so you can have a prosperous economy, a shift in the theft and, extortion rackets that have been going on, and, you know, just win-win for all involved. But you have to be able to use your conscience, not designed to easy take, easy opportunity, greed, and money, but utilize the greed, money, and everything else to set a standard, which is beneficial to make the public the first-line beneficiary in all respects, not just one.
And of course, with any change or any utilization of such monstrous and huge, you know, significant change in the way an economy is run, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a process. But what we're really talking about here is.
But keep in mind, the public was always entertained off in La La Land due to the money involved, and we're talking trillions of dollars. And the public didn't have a clue of the basics; they were intentionally soundbite conditioned to be oblivious to the basics, and you know, not complex basics, the basic fundamentals: how much cash do you have bringing in, what are your investment totals, what's your net worth. No one knows. I mean, anyone I've talked to, thousands of people, whether it be their city, county, school district, didn't have a clue. You know, they all knew exactly what theirs personal was, but never cognitive thought.
Right, generated. So you complain about the school district, but you don't know its checking account.
And you're by design, you're sound by condition not to ask how much cash they're bringing in, what their investments are. I mean, you know, any political, Democratic, Republican, whatever, never mentioned, never peep, never a word, intentional lack of cognitive discussion. Because of the money involved. If the public became involved in the conversation, all of a sudden, things changed. the ease of easy take all of a sudden starts diminishing with public intervention. So keep the public entertained off in La La Land. Continue business as usual.
We're going to have a break here. We're going to have a break here pretty soon, but I really want to get into, you know, what we're talking about here essentially boils down to corporate governance. And I really want to get into the concept and how that would play in this tax retirement fund system.
Can I squeeze in a quick note, being that you're having a retired senator on shortly? When I first started National Disclosure, June of 98, you know, by 99, a radio show host by the name of Jeff Rentz, who I love emphatically, he's a phenomenal guy, he tries really hard, it was out to a lot of people. We did a radio show, 1 hour, and I covered the points. Then we did a two-hour radio show. After I did a two-hour radio show, you know, this is the first time he's hearing this. Okay, he's soundbite conditioned to be off in La La Land, just like everybody else.
And who was this again?
Jeff Rentz.
Oh, okay.
Rentz.com.
Yes,
he does news service and radio show nationally. He reaches, you know, 3, 4, 5, 9 people. But the after the second show, he called a good friend of his who was a retired senator. Yeah, and he basically asked him, "Is Walter full of you know what, or is he telling the truth?" And the senator replied, "Well, actually, right before I got out, I arranged for a $14.5 million loan from one of the funds to build a condominium complex off the islands, and that's my main bread and butter now, and it has been since I've gotten out." And he goes, "Yeah, he's saying he's correct." You know, so then we did a three-hour show, and for that three-hour show, I banged hard. And he was reaching 5 to 6 million people at that time. And three, four days later, CBS canceled 87 of his affiliate stations in his own backyard, California, Oregon, and Washington. You know, the bottom line is, you know, keeping a strict control over the public and their what information they cognitively hear. Because if you create the silence as a golden rule and the public is sitting there talking about everything else but what's important, easy job. Here, especially when they're moving hundreds of billions of dollars back and forth and driving the world economy, ownership of corporations, land projects, and the whole nine yards, and that thought never even crosses the public's mind, you know, to look and see and verify and say, oh, my God, you know, they just keep on going and going, and business as usual, and everyone laughs their asses off down to the bank, including the ones that say they were broke. If you look at any city or county or state, oh, we're broke, we're in hardship from the 2008 bubble, oh, my God, oh, right? If you look at their comprehensive annual financial report, look from 2008 to 2011. Okay, yeah, they took a hit on some of their investment funds at the end of 2008, but not even close to what the public got reamed. And by 2009, they were in recovery and going back to 16-18% profits. And you'll see that the local government, because it gives a clear showing of what their gross income is each and every year for 10-year demographics, you'll see that most of the ones that were crying broke, and as they were crying broke, increased their income by 30-35% over a three-year period.
Well, and isn't it also important to just to understand that because the fund actually lost on its actual stock investment, someone was on the other side of that loss, correct? Someone was betting it. From that loss.
I mean, there's a lot of shifting, a lot of interplay, a lot of backdoor transfer of funds. But back in 2009, 2008, LA City was saying, oh, we're in terrible shape, and, you know, saying we have to declare bankruptcy, and that got me a little bit peeved. So I pulled up the LA City capper, which they had about $115 billion investment fund, and I pulled up the county, which had about $235 billion, and the county's income was $17.5 billion back in 2008. It's currently at $24 billion.
Exactly, and you'll find that across the board. I've certainly done and pulled up enough of those reports to find that out. We'll be right back with Senator Dick LaRosa, who's finally joined us on the phone. You're on The Story Behind the Story on The Micro Effect.
Johnson, you're bringing it through here.
Gosh, sir.
We've been climbing the face of this pyramid for over 5 minutes. I'm exhausted.
Yeah, I can see you are. But I'm fine. Why is that, Johnson?
I don't know, sir.
Nutrition boy, I told you. I bought my food for this journey from a freeze-dry guy, and I got delicious, nutritious stuff, and I feel great. You?
Sir, I've already heard that lecture.
Yeah, probably a waste of time. Come on, Johnson. Through that hatch right there.
Yes, sir.
Down these steps.
Coming, sir.
Through the door at the bottom, and here it is, Johnson. Behold.
Wow! The sarcophagus full of freeze-dried food!
And notice the variety.
Sir, that means even the ancient Egyptians knew about the freeze-dry guy.
No, it means I planted it here in 97 and it's still good.
Wow.
Let's eat, boy.
Yeah.
What do we have? Beef stroganoff?
Oh, yeah.
Chicken and noodles? Got some sweet and sour pork here.
Right, I'll take that.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Bought a few bottles of Heart and Body Extract. I have to say that it certainly does work.
That's what Jack from Michigan had to say after his experience with heart pain and what he did to treat it with Heart and Body Extract.
I actually had a huge heart flutter. Also having some edema around my ankles and very worrisome clot in my right leg that would happen from time to time while I was trying to sleep.
Heart and Body Extract is all natural with no negative side effects. It will help repair or correct past problems associated with the heart and body circulation.
After my second bottle of Heart and Body Extract, all problems are now gone.
Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
I ordered a third bottle of Heart and Body Extract for maintenance, as I want to keep everything working.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you are obsessive compulsive, press 1 repeatedly. If you are codependent, ask someone to press 2 for you. If you have multiple personalities, press 3, 4, 5, and 6. If you are paranoid, we know what you are and what you want. Stay on the line and we'll trace your call. If you're delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you are depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you. If you are dyslexic, press 69696969. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash key until the beep. After the beep, please wait for the beep. If you have a short-term memory loss, please try your call again later. And if you have low self-esteem, hang up. All our operators are too busy to talk to you.
The thing the men behind the curtain want is a conscious, informed public capable of critical thinking, which is why a continually fraudulent zeitgeist is output via religion, the mass media, and the educational system. They seek to keep you in a distracted, naive bubble. And they are doing a damn good job of it.
President Bush signed a formal agreement that will end the United States as we know it. And he took the step without approval from either the U.S. Congress or the people of the United States.
Illuminati, you come to take control. You can take my heartbeat, but you can break my soul. We all shall be free.
This is the Micro Effect.
The Micro Effect. www.themicroeffect.com.
All right, folks, welcome back. You are on the story behind the story. I'm Clint Richardson. With me is Walter Burian from Kaffer1.com. I highly suggest people go and research that website. It's Kaffer, C-A-F-R-1.com. And now joining us, I hope, is former state senator Dick LaRosa, who has quite an impressive resume that I won't go through because it'll take up half the show. But let's just say with a master's in public administration and a PhD in political science, as well as so many other things, a regular guest on several radio shows, And most importantly, a president CEO of Solutions for New Jersey. Now, Walter, what we have here is basically a couple of New Jersey boys. Walter was a part of something called Hands Across New Jersey. So you guys have a lot in common trying to expose what's going on in government. And that is why you two are, well, you're two of my heroes. Dick, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Good to hear from Walter. Going back into, 1991 with the Hands Across New Jersey movement, it was probably one of the most sensational examples of how when the public finally gets motivated that they do have the ability to change things. And the difficulty is that I don't think we've seen anything like that since. We've had a lot of stuff with the Tea Parties and so on, but the motivation that existed with Hands Across New Jersey, the mobilization that took place, the change that they were able to effect and virtually enact, unless or until I think the rest of the country gets to that point, we're going to continue to have this, you know, woe is me mentality, and why is this always happening to me? I mean, I've always said things happen for two reasons. Somebody does it and someone else lets them do it. Well, Hands Across New Jersey was an organization and an entity across the board that said, no, we're not going to let you do it anymore. But if you look at what's happening on the national level, you've, like you said, the media control. I mean, we have a former governor of New Jersey who lost $500 million with MF Global. He basically ran Goldman Sachs into bankruptcy. Was one of the few times in history that we had a one-term governor in New Jersey. And then I heard Walter say before about L.A. being in terrible shape. Well, look what's happening out in, Wisconsin, where the unions are screaming bloody murder, and they really don't care about what's happening to the taxpayer or the public or anything else. The problem is that at some point in time, reality has got to set in. And if it doesn't, you can just simply, spell the United States G-R-E-E-C-E, and that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, can I make a comment there, Clint?
Absolutely. Oh. I'll just let you guys talk.
having you here and talking to you. The key point is greed and opportunity are unrestrained, period. I mean, the public is given fluff and pointed off in la-la land as the boys behind closed doors are cutting their deals at the public's expense. But on the Hands Across New Jersey comments, the key component that allowed Hands Across New Jersey to come into, 63,000 volunteers in 3 months, all 21 counties organized. It was two factors. Number one, Jim Florio, who got in on a no new tax platform and gets a $2.8 billion tax increase, which was from the prior administration, but he could have vetoed it if he wanted to, and he didn't. But the main component was John and Kent from 101.5. Here was an FM station that had access to, close to 10 million people in the area who started rabble-rousing around the clock. So initially it was a challenge by them to start an organization to repeal the tax increase. You know, I was listening in the first couple of days, and they were taking calls on examples of waste and misspending in government, not here, $5,000, $15,000. The highest figure I heard was $85,000. And, when they... In the 85, John and Ken are there, how is this possible? How could this be happening? This shouldn't be going on. I called into the show with a budget report in my hand, right out the bottom line figures, and they had $11 billion on budget, $6 billion off budget, total service budget of about $17 billion. I said, come on, guys, you're missing the whole point. There's fraud, waste, and misspending taking place. It's taking place on tunes of tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's when he challenged us to start an organization to repeal the tax increase. 10 of us got together, incorporated the group Hands Across New Jersey, and took over looking at the budget, revenue, and finance. And I looked at the budget report for half an hour, and I said, this is not inclusive. It's a selective presentation. They were showing the general service budget, but nothing from the autonomous agencies, any large investment funds. You know, I called Richard. Richard Keevy was out until the following Tuesday that week, and I called through the Centrex. I got a hold of his lower assistant. My birth name is Bubien, B-U-B-I-E-N. I said, "Hi, it's Walter Bubien. I'm working on a report for Richard. I have to have it done by Tuesday when he gets back. I need all the figures on the autonomous agency accounts, interest accounts, and investment accounts." And he goes, "Oh, you want the comprehensive annual financial report?" I said, "Yeah, can you send it to me?" He goes, "Well, you better talk to Mark, the next one down from Richard." Hit my speed dial. "Hi, Mark, just spoke to Jim. Working on a report for Richard. I have to have it done by Tuesday. I need the comprehensive annual financial report." "Oh, where do you want to send to?" Got it that Friday. You know, I couldn't care less about the leaves and branches on the trees in the forest. I just want to know what the forest is. So I looked at total cash, gross receipts, and total investments held. Total investments were about $88 billion held by just on state level link. You know, not cities, counties, just state level link. $88 billion. And I said, okay, where are the total cash, gross receipts? Found it on page 174 of, it was 90s report covering 89's figures. Page 174, under total cash additions, this would be tax income, investment income, enterprise income, federal grants, any cash coming in for the state operation, totals. So here's a state with a declared service budget of $17 billion. You ready for what the total cash gross receipts were? $83,799,000,000. I learned the definition of syndicated organized crime right there on the spot. And then, bang me over the head with a baseball bat, I realized I was just looking at the state report, and then you have the hundreds of other local governments, cities, counties, enterprise operations, and so forth, each with their own investments, each with their own assets. I did a calculation back in the 90s, I looked at the collective government investment ownership, liquid, not hard assets, liquid, held by the cities, county, school districts, state, and so forth, enterprise operations. And I said to myself, if New Jersey was a public corporation and every person, man, woman, and child in the state, was an equal shareholder, what would be the value of their shares based on collective government's liquid investment ownership in New Jersey? It came out to about $475,000 per man, woman, and child in the state. You know, her family of five, well, over $1 million. You know, and here you have New Jersey on the greed and opportunity principle taking as much as possible in taxation. It's a wealthy state and high-income earners, so they're bilking them for every penny they can get in any direction, any way, any shape, any form.
Dick mentioned Wisconsin as one of the ones that are claiming this type of poverty and bankruptcy, and yet in 2010, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report showed primary government various funds at $4.4 billion, University of Wisconsin Fund at $365 million, Housing and Economic Development Authority funds at over $1 billion, total University of Wisconsin Foundation fund over $2 billion, state investment fund $6.6 billion. It just goes on and on and on.
They're all designated for specific purposes. We can't touch those. Any profit center, any large money generator is always restricted by statute. By the boys in the first place to allow them to build up the power base in the first place. You know, it's intentionally by design taken off the general purpose operating funds, so it's not to be touched, and they maintain their power base. And when you talk of power base, especially funds $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion, $5 billion, that's a very, very strong power base that backs a hell of a lot of companies and a hell of a lot of individual projects. And with the grease taking place behind closed
really
doors,
bizarre, I don't know if it's a bizarre example of the numbers are pale by comparison to the billions, but I think the principle pretty much speaks to what you were just referencing. In my general area, we have what used to be Trenton State College, which is now the College of New Jersey. They are the most highly leveraged college in terms of loans of any college in the United States on a percentage basis. But here's the interesting part of it. They, in the last several years, have virtually undergone a complete and total metamorphosis in terms of the new buildings that have been built on campus. But they can't afford to pay for the building of these buildings. So what has happened is the college has actually deeded the property to a thing called the Educational Facilities Authority. So the Educational Facilities Authority, which is a state agency, goes out and issues bonds, and then they turn around and build the building that the college wants, and then what the college does is make a debt payment against the bonds they couldn't afford to issue in the first place. Mm-hmm. Now, that's more than a little bizarre.
Well,
did you catch the point I made regarding backdoor funding? I'm sorry?
Did you catch the point I made earlier regarding backdoor funding?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, there's a perfect example of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they are so inept. And again, these are this is a very small example in terms of total ineptitude. A couple of years ago, they wanted to build a series of parking garages because they didn't have enough parking on campus, and they were supposed to go behind a number of homes that bordered on one of the highways nearby. After a long battle, they finally decided to move the garages into the middle of the campus, which is where they belong, and instead decided to build dormitories in place, or instead. So they were in such a rush to build these dormitories that when the first two went up, the spring rains hit probably in March or April. This is going back to about 2000 and maybe one or two. And when the spring rains hit, they totally soaked the buildings to the point where they became inundated with black mold. They had to literally level the buildings that they had put up. They had to literally remove the dirt and start from scratch all over again. And what should have been maybe a $10 to $15 million project to date has cost the college, because of their stupidity, over $85 million.
Yeah, but you're making a very big error, which most people are actually soundbite conditioned to believe. Mm-hmm. They didn't make an error. Would you agree that with that money, a lot of money changed hands, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
If you actually looked at the underlying, cause and effect, and you could have had it planned to happen that way for getting overrides and so forth because of money greasing the skids.
Mm-hmm.
It may look like, when people call their local politicians stupid, I make the point. I said, here is collective government controlling a majority of the GDP in this country, and you call them stupid. I'd call them extremely optimistic.
Well, and isn't it a case here where the people are going to be paying that bond, not government? People are being, right. It's being nationalized to the people.
Yeah, just taking it's an undisclosed tax by using another vehicle to tap the public. But I would highly recommend getting the New Jersey 1989 CAFR. You mentioned colleges and universities, so here's a key point. In the 89 report, it consolidated all the colleges and universities into one combined financial column, which on their investment assets, it showed they started off with about $8.6 billion for the year and ended with like $9.8 billion. Okay, so they had a pretty good year in 98. When I saw their investment income, which was like $1.something billion, I said, what's the total tuitions collected from all students on these consolidated universities and colleges? Well, their investment return was substantially greater than all tuitions collected. What they did that year, though, was, citing a shortfall of budgetary revenue, they had an 8% tuition increase for all students. That's a pretty clear example of greed and opportunity.
Yeah.
They could have actually, if they had tapped in just the return from the investment funds, all the kids could have gone to school for free for the year and gotten paid just from the annual return.
And it continues unabated. I mean, nothing has changed in terms of how they operate. I mean, I don't know if you have seen this.
Here's an important point. If you look at all the governors from all across the country, about 8 out of 10, when they get out, they're no longer governor. 8 out of 10, all of a sudden, you'll find them sitting on the board of directors of their state university, because that's where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
They want to direct where it's going.
Well, think about this for a second. I mean, the most recent, and I really put this in large quotes, cost-saving measure that our governor has dreamed up is to consolidate the University of Medicine and Dentistry which is up in, you know, North Jersey, and consolidate it and bring it under the auspices of Rutgers, which they consider to be the state university. Now, what's very interesting about this, and I hope you both are sitting down and holding on tightly, no one has been able to come up with what the cost of this merger is going to be. However, the estimates has ranged from $850,000 to $8 billion.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a difference there, isn't it?
But this is what's been published.
Yeah, always think on terms of grease on the skids. You got to think about who's cutting backdoor deals behind closed doors to push something through to get it accomplished. You remember Jim Florio?
Of course, very well.
Very well. He was the one who triggered Hands Across New Jersey. But he basically came to Philadelphia with his family in a station wagon, about 100-some-odd thousand net worth. But the law firm he got a job with, they sponsored him. You know, he put up $2 million to get him elected as governor.
Mm-hmm.
The very first thing he did, there was a $3.5 billion toxic waste cleanup fund in New Jersey. He allocated about $2 billion to the Glassboro dump, which was the primary client of the law firm that sponsored him. You know, so you know, here's $2 billion going to the Glassboro dump to clean up their mess. Directed by a law firm who sponsored Florio for governor. You know, it's very basic, very simple, nothing complicated, but the public has to look at the basics and, you know, just do a little digging to see the motive and intent behind almost every action from within government.
I mean, the government motive is not to help the people. The government motive is to keep feathering their own nest so that when they leave office, they have something to fall back on. I mean, for crying out loud, I mean, how do we have a federal government that allows people like John Dingell to be in office for 54 years, or Daniel Inouye at the end of his current term to have been in office for 56 years. I mean, if that doesn't tell you that something is incredibly corrupt, I mean, I don't know what it is. It's a shame we can't wave that magic wand and have every person that has been there for more than 12 years now at the next election cycle just force them to leave office and just replace every single one of them. Now,
the key point that always caught my attention regarding the when you have someone running for like five different offices and they collect five different pensions, I always thought that was the epitome of corruption.
We have one guy in New Jersey. He is he's a state senator, member of the Freeholder Board, the superintendent of schools, and the mayor of a town. That's mm-hmm. one person.
And he'll get all separate pensions. Yeah.
All separate pensions. Mm-hmm. Then we have a town in out near the shore. I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's called Kingsburg. Kingsburg recently had their police chief retire. Police chief retired at a pension of $120,000 annually and then was rehired back as the township administrator for another $110,000. Now,
milk the cow dry
is what you're doing. And I mean, exactly. These are just two very, very small examples, which are going on all over the country in every single state. I'm beginning to believe that the term honest politician is a complete and total oxymoron.
Well, I can brief you on a key point, which you probably don't know. You may or may not, but I don't think you know this. But when I looked at the 89 CAFR, you know, which had the pension funds listed in the CAFR at that time, one of our volunteers wrote the pension funds for Blue Cross Blue Shield nationally. So I gave him the state CAFR, and I said, I don't understand pensions. Can you look at the state pensions and compare them to a Fortune 500 company? He said it would take him about 2 weeks. 2 weeks later, I checked back and said, what do you got? He goes, well, the state pensions on a scale from 1 to 10, with a Johnson & Johnson being a 5, they're all a 7, excluding the judicial branch. He goes, the judicial branch was the Millionaire Boys Retirement Club. Their pension package was about $7 million. And here's the key point. They got their full benefits after serving 1 year tenure. There was no 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. After serving 1 year tenure, they could retire and collect their full pension. Now, when I spoke to the pension fund administrator on that point, he goes, well, we want to keep our state judges honest, and we don't want to have them in a position where they can be bought off. And I said, well, kind of looks like they've already been bought off, you know. And you'll notice when they, if there's a judge that's ruling in the favor of the population, he'll get targeted for some smear campaign and, you know, may be removed. They remove him, yeah, but then he collects his full pension.
Right, exactly. Well, I don't know
if he's cooperative with the organized crime gang, but, then, you know, they maintain.
Yeah, the governor tried to, I think, cap salaries across the board, or you know, so that they didn't exceed a certain amount. Or it required a, it was an additional contribution to the pension system, which obviously included the judiciary in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Well, they are so arrogant, if you can believe this, that one of the judges felt that they should be immune from the additional contribution and is now suing the state so that the judges don't have to make that additional contribution. Well, if you want to talk about the fox guarding the hen house, who do you think is going to hear that case?
The judges. Yeah.
Hey, listen, guys, we are running out of time.
Well, let me ask a quick question for Dick. Dick, do you think federal judges have a pension fund?
Of course they do.
No, they don't.
They don't.
This was my... people kept asking me, what are the federal judges getting? And I said, well, I don't know. And after a couple of years, I finally looked. Couldn't find any pension funds for the federal judges. So I called around to the court clerks. The one in Oklahoma City was honest. He goes, sir, they don't have a pension fund. They're appointed for life. They get their full paycheck and benefits for life. And then she referred me to the federal statutory section, which I looked it up. And I noticed two asterisk notes. 3 years before, they all got together and gave themselves a 26% pay increase. And they all got together to make it where when they die, they could give their survivorship benefits to their wife and dependent relative for life. Yeah. So, you know, that was the, federal judges are even in the bigger Millionaire Boys Retirement Club. But what they did in California blew me away. California, I looked in 96, they were on the same pension program New Jersey was, where after 2 years tenure, they got their full packages. But California, I thought, was cleaning up their act where they started judges' pension fund program C, where they participated 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I noticed the fund balance in A, the original one, was minuscule, and B was large. What they did was they gave the cash option to all the existing judges to take the full value of their pension minus penalties. So a lot of
Hey guys, we are at the end of time. We could do this all day, I'm sure. It's been a pleasure having you both. Dick, I'm sorry we didn't get to your websites and stuff, but
not a problem.
Again, you're a hero.
A pleasure as always.
All right, guys, thank you very much. Tomorrow we'll have Bob Burton on Agenda 21. Please join me then. Thank you for joining us today. This is Storm.
And Dick, give me a call when you get a chance.
We'll do it. Just give me your number.
928-458-5854.
5844?
Look at my front page, camphor1.com.
DisclosureNewsOnline.com is a web version of Disclosure News Magazine Monthly. It's an alternative news product from Southern Illinois, now in its 8th year. DisclosureNewsOnline.com details the crime, corruption, and official misconduct rampant in the state of Illinois. From local, state, and national news affecting all of us, presented with a no-nonsense approach, visit DisclosureNewsOnline.com to subscribe and have the full print version of Disclosure News mailed to your home monthly. That's DisclosureNewsOnline.com.
It's hard to imagine when things are going reasonably well just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse? Massive crop failure? Chemical or biological attack? So many situations could find you in the grocery looking to pick up food for your family only to find that the shelves are empty. There's nothing. Don't let that happen. Act today to make sure that if it ever comes to that, you and your family will be provided for. Visit freezedryguy.com to look at the wide variety of survival foods available. Freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy store longer, rehydrate faster, are nutritionally superior to, and taste better than any other long-term storage food available. Visit freezedryguy.com or call toll-free 866-404-3663. freezedryguy.com.
Camping, hiking, backpacking, Alice packs, military surplus, tactical gear. The list goes on and on and on. You can find it at CJL Enterprise. That's ENTERPRIZE.com. You can call us at 816-359-7945. We are open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year on the web. Again, it's CJL Enter, ENTERPRIZE.com, CJL Enterprise.com. You can call us at 816-359-7945. CJL Enterprise.
Are you getting harassed by debt collectors? Do you cringe when the phone rings or when getting your mail? Are you having problems with your mortgage?